A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G, yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Paul and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can't prove yet that Jack Easterby is the reason why Trev Albert is the new athletic director of Texas A&M, but I'm going to keep looking during the breaks, trying to find some connection. How close is Nebraska to Kansas City? It's pretty
Nebraska,
close, right?
Kansas City. Well, it's all one state, right?
Yeah, there's nothing in between those two places, yeah. So you can probably get there pretty fast.
Right, there's
probably a lot of mileage.
You'd have to probably fly because you have to get over the massive corn husks.
So Jack was the chaplain with the Chiefs while Trev Alberts was at Omaha as an administrator. Not at the University of Nebraska, just at Omaha. So maybe that's our connection there, that they somehow found God.
Did they go? Hey, I was going to say, did they go to the same church or something?
I mean, there's not a lot going on in those states, so they might have gone to the same. Like, there's like a church in the middle somewhere. it's like, drive up and meet you.
I got to say, too, even with that aspect of Easterby's career. So, I mean, Easterby becomes a known chaplain because someone killed himself on the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Jovan Belcher. It is wild the ladders he is willing to climb.
General manager in the NFL.
Willing to climb. Makes it seem like he did it on purpose with Belcher.
That's what I'm wondering. Like, do you think in a job interview that Jack Easterby says, straight-faced, well, when a Chiefs player killed himself, I was here for the entire locker room.
Yeah, he helped navigate the situation, helped keep the team together. Like, that's definitely what you say in a job interview.
It is, but it's just such a...
It's a lot.
To me... If someone brought that up, you got to have the proper tone when you say that. Because if you're braggadociously doing Jack Easterby's routine that we've seen him do for a massive audience.
That's a joke. You'll laugh later. That's my favorite one.
I think it was Rivers McCown, maybe it was somebody else. Someone put the Seinfeld laugh track underneath him, and I was like, oh, this makes it so much better.
Well, he laughs at his own jokes.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah,
but I'm very curious. In every single interview that Easterby did on his way up to the top of the Houston Texans organization, I'm just very curious as to how he portrayed himself. There is no doubt that the guy has a charm to him that some people fall for.
100%.
No doubt. And you know, we all want to be welcoming. We all want to be trusting of other people. And I'm just going to say this again. I'm glad that Buzz Williams distanced himself publicly, commentary-wise, but it's very clear from some Aggie players that, he's not just a casual friend. He was in the front row of that press conference. That does not happen.
He was, like, hugging Wade Taylor after their first round game, like their lifelong friends. Wade Taylor then shot 5 for 26 against the Cougs. 3 for 13 from 3.
What's it like to be touched by Jack? You stink at basketball, apparently. All right, let's go to our Astros opening day countdown.
It's always Astros time in Houston. Are you ready to play?
A lot of people were wondering what it was going to be like if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know.
We're counting you down to the Astros season opener against the New York Yankees March 28th.
Three more days until opening day when Fran Rivaldez will take the mound against, I don't know who the Yankees opening day starter is.
I think it's Nestor Cortez.
That's right, because Marcus Stroman told them no, that he didn't want to be the opening day starter.
He didn't want to be it?
Was he like, I haven't earned my pinstripes yet?
Must be. That's the only way you can get away with that and not seem like a total beta.
No, he said it because it would change his routine.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Like his, like, every 5 days.
How obsessive compulsive is he?
I don't know, but if I'm the Yankees, I regret that contract right now.
That's an honor.
The turn down opening day is wild.
Especially as a Yankee.
Is he going to start like game 3?
Yes.
All right, well, Yankees are done. I'm going to say it right now. I'm going to say it right now. March 25th, 2024, the Yankees season is over entirely because of a story that Joe just told me about how, what's this guy's name? Marcus Stroman does not want to go on opening day.
Rip the Yankees. So Alex Bregman was meeting with the media after he hit, what, two bombs in his last spring training game. I guess there's still technically two more spring training games tonight and tomorrow at Minute Maid Park when they take on the Space Cowboys.
But in Florida, they are done.
Yeah, in Florida, they're done. From the reminder, ESPN 92.5 will carry all Space Cowboys games this season. So when Justin Verlander makes his first start of the year in Sugar Land.
Lance McCullers, Jose Urquidy,
Luis Garcia.
Yeah.
You're home for Astros starting pitchers.
Yes, ESPN 93.5. We might just need to start.
We have better pitchers than the Astros flagship on our station.
That's it. We might need to start making promos like that because those are very good points. But Alex Bregman said he's not expecting a contract extension before opening day.
Not surprising.
I'm not surprised either. They never made it seem like this was a certain that the offer would come before March 28th.
Dana Brown said it would come at some point during the regular season. I think the best thing that we can see is that nothing, at least to our eyes, seems to have gotten testy. Even though you could perhaps read between the lines, oh, wow, he bought a house in Arizona, Alex Bregman did. Uh-oh, does that mean he's going to leave? But everything's cordial right now, and that's good. And specifically on the Astros front, this is not something that you want to be messy whether he stays or goes.
No, it's just you let it play out. We'll see how it goes. I'm still hopeful that, you know, when he hits the market, that he's not going to find the market that he wants. I hate to root for a guy to not make the money that he wants, but he's also, even if he signs a three-year, $100 million contract with the Astros, he's still generationally wealthy, him and his family. So it's not like he's going to be a broke boy if he signs that deal with the Astros.
What if he starts gambling like Joe George did at the casino this past week?
Then he'll be making more money because I won this weekend.
Okay.
So as long as
losing at first.
As long as he's not Shohei Ohtani.
But that's assuming Scott Boras can even still negotiate at all, right?
Because he's washed.
Yeah.
He's washed.
He is washed.
Someone called me Scott Boras the other day.
Did you hear this, Paul?
No. They called you Scott Boras?
No, it was the guy at the coffee bar at O Athletic. He must have seen the video, and a lot of them know that why I'm there is a sponsorship and
kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah.
But he couldn't remember my name.
I'm the Joe George. You didn't remember my name?
He couldn't remember my name. He goes, "You look familiar, Scott Boras." I'm like, "No, dude. No, I'm not washed."
I mean, you would want to be Scott Boras.
Hell yeah. Because even these washed contracts he's getting, he's still making millions on.
He's still getting, it's whatever, 5% commission.
He's still making tons and tons and tons of money.
Just got to wet my beak.
Yeah, can I take 0.1%? So no contract for Bregman. I'm not worried about it. But is this your feeling that this is his last opening day?
Yeah, I do feel that way.
I do too. I was hoping that the deal would get done at this point, but I still believe this will likely be the last opening day for Alex Bregman.
Especially with the, and I don't know, I mean, I don't know what position Joey Loperfido is actually going to play, but with all the sudden, random hype about an Astros infielder, Joey Loperfido. Now I'm wondering, okay, what are we doing?
Because
are we trying to pump up the
soft
tires?
Soft launching them.
Exactly, a soft launch. Like on Instagram, when you show that you're out on a date with somebody, but you don't show who the person is.
A hand holding a wine glass.
It's always a hand holding a wine glass. Sean, I saw somebody is a recent target of mine who pulled one of those over the weekend. I was like, thank God, I need to stop pursuing this absolutely horrible person.
Explain?
I'm not talking about Beagle Girl. I'm talking about
recent target.
This is somebody that
it's college football recruiting.
this is one of those people where I should not like the person, and yet I do, and it's entirely because the person's got a great body.
that's it. That's fine.
It's terrible. No, I'm glad I saw
it's
this.
Not a sin.
I could stop. I could stop.
But why did you? Why do you have to stop?
I'm stopping pursuing him.
Okay.
Just cutting off contact.
Because she had
altogether.
The wine glass photo with the.
Yeah, she just did the soft launch. You know what a soft launch is?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. She had a soft launch on her Instagram story.
But did she hold it like Joe Spada did? Do you guys remember that photo?
Yeah. Well, because
he held it just by the bottom.
He's a sommelier.
I saw that photo and it blew. I'm like, I've never seen anyone hold a wine glass like that in my life.
Yeah, that's when you kind of stumble into a situation where you're like, oh, this is more like either rich or upper class than I am. I am out of my element here.
Oh, man. I always get so intimidated. I have some richer friends, and when they start talking about wines, I'm like, what? I'm like, I'll just nod them. I'm like, yeah.
So we slap in the back tonight? Or?
I mean, I will make that joke occasionally, but sometimes I'm with people that are so serious, they don't understand my sarcasm.
They don't. Oh, I thought you were going to say they're so rich, they don't get the joke.
that might be it. But then they like start talking about watches, and I'm like, well, I got this with a gift card.
Yes, yeah, that's where.
See
party.
This new Timex?
Yeah.
That's where, like, with my having my wife work at an Italian restaurant, whenever we go somewhere nice. She just knows everything.
That's good. Like, that's choose. Key.
You choose all of them.
You're running the offense,
yeah.
Jamal Shad.
Yeah. I'll worry about the appetizers and what kind of salad we're going to get. Like, you worry about the wine, and we're good to go.
There are times where I'm like, just get the cheapest bottle. Just get the cheapest bottle.
Always get,
just get the cheapest glass.
I always go,
why do we got to get a bottle? Okay, how about just two glasses?
Yeah, it depends on... You're going to end up losing money if you get the glass sometimes.
You're right, but it's the funniest thing ever. Like, when you're with certain people, and then they're like, yeah, let's get the $200 bottle. How about the $20 one? Come on!
What's your strategy on a date, then? So, your date wants to get a bottle of wine.
Run out before they force me to pay.
Well, so like, but like, there's, you know, you gotta find the wine that's in the middle.
Hold on, I'm getting a call. One second.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take this outside.
I'm such a white knight, Joe. My strategy is like, I ask for them to pay.
Oh yeah,
because I believe in equality.
How's that working out for
you? Working
out.
Work. I mean, I could probably find a sugar lady. That strategy.
You haven't tried that path yet?
No, I have not.
You find a sugar mama.
No.
Paul Gallant's sugar mama stories would be incredible content for this show.
I am running out of options.
I mean, and there's a reason why they're available, usually. So, they have money.
It's because they're strong, independent women, and no one can handle it.
Speaking of Alex Bregman, one of the more well-known writers in baseball has a spicy Alex Bregman take. Plus, we got updates on Jake Myers and Jose Urquidy. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
One thing you never want to see right as spring training is going to end is a player get hurt. And there was a little worry about Jake Myers there. Got hit in the hand, had to go for x-rays, but it appears he's okay.
I'm going to say something controversial.
Okay.
There's a part of me that wish a door had been opened for Mauricio Dubon to be the everyday center fielder. And if it came because of a Jake Myers injury, I would not have been upset. We do hope that Jake Myers recovers. And if he was on the disabled...
Injured list.
Sorry.
Don't get canceled, Paul. Come on.
If he were on the injured list...
Shame.
It would allow for Mauricio Dubon to play. And for Mauricio Dubon to start opening day, which he should. Anyway.
Agreed.
Myers is hurt. I suppose we're going to see all the potential that's always been there this year with Jake Myers. And guess what? I hope I'm wrong, but my first reaction was, when I saw that news, oh, Mauricio Dubon's going to actually start the year in the everyday lineup as opposed to being a super utility guy like he won a gold glove doing last year.
Well, I mean, look, the way Jake Myers played this spring, it's positive signs, but it means nothing at the same time. Because he needs to do it every day, every other day, on the main roster, in the lineup. And it's the one thing with the Astros this year for me that I would have a short leash on as a fan of the team, as Joe Espada. I'm not running this guy out there for as long as Dusty Baker did. You know what the track record tells you. So if he's healthy, which it seems that he is, and if it does not go well, then just move on. Just you got to play Chaz.
You got to play Doobie. And maybe there's a way that, you know, Lopefito can, fit into the equation, or Jacob Melton after some time in the minors to start the season. I don't need to wait 2-3 months into the season. You're going to know your answer on Jake Meyers.
I hope that, and this is a totally different situation, but I hope that the way that Joe Espada basically told Fromber, yo, you ain't doing this calling your own pitch thing after one outing. I hope that he is one of those immediate correctors as opposed to someone who is laissez-faire. Because I think a lot of the people who were mad at Dusty Baker last year believe that he was a little bit laissez-faire on that front. He did not correct things immediately. He would sit back and say, oh, it's going to work out all in the end. And, okay, for the most part, it did, especially in 2022 with the World Series. But sometimes you actually want somebody who is going to correct something immediately as opposed to being patient.
Now, we also know from this weekend, Dana Brown said that the expectation for Justin Verlander is that he will face live hitters again today or tomorrow, and that he will miss 2 or 3 starts. So that's not bad. So that means you got him by the end of April at the absolute latest. It does sound like he'll make an appearance, if the timing works out in Sugar Land, assuming that they are home when he's willing, ready to make that rehab start, because they won't send him to, Reno or wherever they're playing. So if the game's at home, then, maybe there's a chance that you can all go see Justin Verlander in Sugar Land for a much cheaper price. That's like my favorite thing about the Space Cowboys being the Astros affiliate, because you can get cheap rehab starts. But we also found out that, they're hoping Jose Urquidy can return in May. I don't like the word hope.
Yeah, especially when...
Sometimes hope's a good thing.
Hope is a return in May.
Yes.
Because we were all of the hope that this would be 3 weeks or something. If you're hoping that he can be back in May, and we're talking about a forearm issue, there's a bit of wishful thinking going on. I'm not a doctor. I don't know what the hell is going on with that forearm of his. But that feels like, hey, let's be cautious and hope it's just better, and that the next time he's out there doesn't re-aggravate itself.
Yes. And so we'll wait and see with Jose Urquidy, but... Dana Brown said in this interview with the Chronicle that with Matt Caracalla, that he feels good about the rotation depth. Good for you, Dana Brown, because I don't feel that way. Just the amount of injuries they have right now. I mean, literally, the rotation in Sugar Land or on the injured list is way better than the rotation the Astros have.
Yeah, there's not depth right now. I don't know what they're talking about.
The depth comes in July.
And it will come. And I'm sure Dana Brown at the trade deadline will say, look at what we did at the trade deadline. Much like he said when Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez got back last year. He will say the same thing. And he will be technically correct, but the depth does not exist right now. They are going to have to make things work with bubblegum, duct tape. They're going to have to MacGyver their way through this. By the way, they've done it before, but it's J.P. France, it's Ronel Blanco. And are you expecting those guys to do what they did for a good amount of time last year, specifically France? I personally am not. I hope I am proven wrong.
And even if they don't, as long as Fromber and Javier are what you need them to be, and you hope Hunter Brown takes the next step, if those three things happen, then you can deal with whatever happens with 4 and 5.
Brown is the big question for this year. It really is a matter of, is he close to the person that we all hyped up about 2 years ago, or is he just, best case scenario, going to be a solid number 3? Or number 4. And there's no shame in that. The majors are a very difficult league to crack into. But we had very elevated expectations for Hunter Brown, and we did not even come close to meeting them last year.
I mean, if he's a solid number 3, that you'd take it for 2024.
Hell yeah.
You know, if his next step is just being a solid number 3, congratulations. Like, I feel good about that part of the Astros rotation. Because I really do think that Hunter Brown and Christian Javier are the two biggest kind of – what kind of years we get from them will tell us a lot about how good the Astros are, especially in the first half before the reinforcements come and when you're having to depend on, like you said, the Ty Frances, Ronel Blancos, Brandon Belaks of the world. It would be easier to – if that's half your rotation, but the other half is Fromber's pitching well, Javier's pitching well, Hunter Brown is pitching well. That would be a nice balance to have before Verlander comes back and eventually Garcia and McCullers.
Well. Yeah, definitely. It would be very wonderful if those things happen. You really think Hunter Brown a bigger question than Javier bounce back for you, or just because Javier do it?
We've seen Javier and Fromber do it.
Sure.
So we know that they're capable of it.
Yeah.
Hunter Brown, we saw at the end of what, 22? We were like, oh, look at this. This is cute. Here's a guy. He's just come from the minors and he's looking pretty good. But, you know, last year everything kind of looked the same to the average batter, and they started shellacking him, and he never rebounded. He never came close to rebounding. It was a bad year, but that happens. I'm not writing I'm not writing an epitaph for his career or anything like that. I'm just saying, yo.
No, I understand.
Yo, this is, I think, that of all the guys, like the biggest variable one way or another, it's got to be Brown. Because I think you do lean towards Fromber and Javier being better than they were last year.
Because, I mean, we've seen Fromber do it for an entire year. We've seen him do it for longer than that. But we've seen him string together a year's worth of quality starts. We've seen half years out of Christian Javier. We saw it at the back end of 2022. He was awesome, and we just haven't seen it over the full year for Javier. With Hunter Brown, like Paul mentioned, we really just haven't seen it more than a start here, a start there. Because even last year when he was pitching well, like when he was pitching better, it was still relatively inconsistent as far as what you're getting start in, start out from Hunter Brown. So if he can raise the ceiling a little bit and raise the floor too, be a little bit more consistent with that raised ceiling, then we're really talking about a quality rotation once Verlander comes in and you get pretty good Fromber. Let's just say, like, you know, the 80th percentile of what you can expect from him, not the 10 out of 10 best, but just even like just good Fromber, you get good Javier, you mix that in with a solid Hunter Brown, and then you have Justin Verlander. That's all we need. That's all we're asking out of this rotation for the first half of the year until that depth comes, until Dana Brown's able to make some trades at the trade deadline and get Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia back on this team.
Bob Nightingale predicted Alex Bregman to win the MVP this year.
I like it. I'll take it.
Good. I want that.
I'll take a pay me my damn money year from Alex Bregman.
Would you be bummed out about the probability that he's completely gone? Like, you don't even have a chance to bring him back if he gets the MVP?
No.
Because MVP does not guarantee a World Series. In fact, an MVP might guarantee that the Astros are 72 and, 88 or something like
the
that.
Angels?
Yeah, they're the Angels or something.
Yeah, it wouldn't. No, because it would still give you a very good chance to win the MVP. I mean, to win the World Series. If Alex Bregman has an MVP year, I'd assume you're the one seed.
Yeah, the problem with the Angels wasn't that they had MVPs. It was everyone else on their team.
Yeah.
It was the fact that the third baseman hates baseball. That was an issue.
Maybe there's other issues.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Maybe there's games being thrown. That's the reason why the Angels were winning MVPs and not winning World Series.
I think the Angels' track record of being a sad, pathetic franchise was a little bit before Shohei showed up, too, of being disappointing with Albert Pujols.
Even the fictional version of them sucked. Angels in the outfield. They're garbage. They needed divine intervention so that Rogers could have a father figure in his life.
It's the true origin story of Jack Easterby, Angels in the outfield. All right. Our 10-minute drill is next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
We're tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant and Joe George. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time.
Time for the 10-minute drill here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Gallant and George. Breaking news.
Breaking news. What happened?
Texans signed defensive back.
Defensive back? Quandre Diggs?
Miles Bryant, former Patriots corner.
Well, not a good sign when I don't know who that is and I'm a Patriots fan. But, hey, you know, I'm guessing.
That's a good point.
I'm guessing you're buying low and hoping for high.
It's been in the NFL since 2020. Let's see. Career 200 tackles, 4 interceptions, 17 pass deflections.
Oh, that's a lot.
Hey, he looks like a solid player according to Wikipedia.
You know what? He might be already the number 2 corner.
Man, they really love to go for these. And he is not fit into this category, obviously. I still can't believe that right now CJ Henderson and Jeff Okuda are their plans at corner this season.
Never a good sign when you look up somebody who is a new member of your team and the first name that comes up from Google search is a totally different person.
Mm-hmm. It's not good.
Especially when the person's done something horrible.
Oh, what?
Who'd you look up?
I looked up Miles Bryant. I think I spelled Miles wrong.
Oh, okay. The hip drop tackle has been banned.
That is dumb. It's dumb.
Yeah, the NFLPA was very adamant against this, and then it passed unanimously today on the competition committee. Which surprises me. If the NFLPA is telling you don't get rid of it, and then the competition committee says we know more than you, they're probably wrong. I would side with the players here.
Well, the competition committee doesn't care about the players at all, and I think they believe that, hey, if another player gets hurt like this, that means that less people are going to be happy watching, and they are legitimately concerned about scoring being down in the league, so I think that's a part of it. But yeah, I saw J.J. Watt say, like, why don't we just skip to flags?
I don't totally disagree.
What bothers me the most about the banning of this is the idea that there is some sort of technique being taught to tackle people like this. No, man. You're trying to tackle somebody. You're trying to bring them down by any means necessary. And sometimes,
yeah,
just based off of where your body physically is, that's the way to do it. So now you're basically saying, all right, well, if you want to tackle somebody, you might have to take on a 15-yard penalty. Is this going to stop it? I don't think it does. I think it's just going to add 15-yard penalties in. The idea that people are going to stop doing this when it is, I think, a very difficult move to pull off on a regular basis, I do not see that happening. So, I just think there's just going to be more 15-yard penalties now.
And when they initially started talking about this, the one clips that kept kind of going around that people were using as an example were some Aiden Hutchinson sacks on Dak Prescott, which I thought was, okay, I could see why you want to take that out of the game. And then some footage got leaked out or, you know, posted from, you know, Twitter accounts from the coaches and GM meetings or whatever that's happening right now in the NFL. And the example number two that they used was from San Francisco days was Jimmy Ward, in which he was chasing a wide receiver across the middle of the field. He grabs him and then he does the hip drop where he pulls him down. He drops his feet out from underneath him. And I'm just like, you're chasing a guy from behind. Like, you're just trying to make a tackle. It doesn't feel like this is not Vontaze Burfict trying to kill Antonio Brown.
Right. There's no intent.
Yeah, they're just trying to make a tackle.
That's what bothers me about it. And the way that some people are describing it, saying there's some sort of advanced technique behind it. I think Florio put that in his write-up. That's just disingenuous.
Yeah. This just feels like a headache. This is going to be a lead topic.
It already was, man.
This is going to be Texans lost a playoff game or Texans won a playoff game or a regular season game because of a hip drop tackle penalty. And there's going to be a huge controversy because I don't think the referees are going to have a good feel on this also. This is not cut and dry. And that's what this is a gray area penalty. I don't like it.
Well, if there's a gray area, that means they're going to overcorrect it first and then hopefully they figure it out on the fly.
Yeah.
But
does the play happen enough to where
no,
typically,
I don't think it does.
Like when they tried the offensive pass interference and how they tried to change it, and we saw it really come into play in the preseason, and then by week one they figured it out. The hip drop tackle does not happen enough to where you're going to be able to figure it out in a preseason.
I legitimately, for the most part, do not see it when it happens. You would need to explain it to me afterwards. I would just think to myself, oh, that's a tackle. And guess what? Most of these players, in the moment, when you're trying to tackle somebody, you're not thinking to yourself,
should I try to tackle it with the hip-hop tackle? Or should I go for the Harkinian harpoon move? Or some other BS move? No, no one does that. You run at the person, you try to bring them down.
Cowboys are, according to Pro Football Talk, in the story they put out there, that they seem willing to let Dak walk after 2025. Or 2024 into the next free agency year. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
I don't like Dak that much as a quarterback. I think he's fine. Replacing him seems very challenging.
So instead of being all in, the Cowboys are actually about to walk away.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are about to cash out.
they're going to do the opposite.
Right. So Jerry Jones was just talking completely out of his ass when he said all those things. What's funny is that Jerry Jones also, I believe, said in a recent interview, we still believe in Dak Prescott, but at the same time, that story's coming out about how privately behind the scenes Jerry might be willing to let him walk after the season's done.
It's just fun to say, hey, we're going to be all in this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of it. Jerry Jones just wants to, yeah, we're going to do it. And then all the, you know, Stephen Jones and all the people that, like, actually run the Cowboys are like, we are not going all in on this. Like, this is not going to happen. But it still gets branded with the all in, comma, my ass.
And then there's this photo that's going around from Jerry this weekend.
Oh, yes.
Which is great. And one of the, it's this piece of paper that's just literally scribbles.
Yeah, he's, like, sitting down talking to reporters and stuff. And in front of him is, like, a notepad where, theoretically, he was taking notes at some point during the owner's meeting. And people zoomed in on the notepad, and it's literally just scribbles. Like, there's not, like, words being... He literally just took a pen and just went...
Hey, he's drawing lines. Like, yeah. It's not like he's writing too fast and you can't read it.
It's not like a doctor's handwriting. It's literally just scribbles.
It's literally... Yeah, it looks like it. It's just lines.
Maybe he's like the little kid in the ring.
But he apparently said,
drawing
quote,
demonic drawings.
I think there are a handful or more of quarterbacks playing who haven't won a Super Bowl that will win a Super Bowl.
A handful.
I think Dak is one of them. I'm firm there. He's one of the ones who can. So what is it? Can he win a Super Bowl or are you going to let him walk?
He turns the ball over too much.
Because it can't be both.
He can't win.
Quarterbacks who haven't won a Super Bowl, who you think will? CJ?
Yes.
Joe Burrow?
Yes.
Josh Allen?
No.
I lean towards no on Josh Allen. Jalen Hurts?
Not after last year.
Dakota? We said no to. Are we missing anyone?
Jared Goff?
No.
I would say Brock Purdy.
Make a Super Bowl. Brock Purdy?
Brock Purdy or Jared Goff, kind of one of the other.
If you have to pick one of those, who are you picking? Purdy,
because the 49ers are so much better.
Well, yeah, they've actually made a Super Bowl.
Right.
Goff's gone to a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
The Rams. With Sean McVay.
Yeah. Like, do I think Sean McVay's going to another Super Bowl? Yeah.
Oh, really? You think with Stafford or with someone else?
Maybe with Stafford.
They
but
were weirdly good last year.
He's also 38 years old.
I know. They're going to be a new quarterback.
He's a 38-year-old good coach.
He might leave, though.
Oh.
Yeah, he might just.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, hard for me to see it, especially after the most recent playoff performance. Like, the only time he's ever looked good has been like a half of a game in every playoff game that he's been in. It's never been more than a half where he's looked like the guy.
Kyler?
Murray?
No, the other Kyler.
I'm a no on Kyler.
There might be another one. It's 2024. It seems to be a popular name.
Jordan Love believes the Packers have a chance to win the Super Bowl next season. So, Jordan Love?
Out. But it's a limited sample size, so I could see myself.
I can see him being a great quarterback for 15 years and winning one Super Bowl.
They have the youngest roster in the NFL. Like they have a ton of young talent on their team. So there could be a point where if he's just competent, that they could be a Super Bowl contender. It's hard to say no to a lot of NFC quarterbacks. That's why I struggle saying no to Dak.
Well, the problem with the NFC quarterbacks is that they're going to have to play an AFC quarterback to win the Super Bowl. And the AFC is tough because it's like, when he said a handful, at first you're like, what are you talking about, dude? You don't think there's more than like five guys that can win a Super Bowl in the NFL? And then you're like, well, Patrick Mahomes is going to go to like four more of them at least. Like, just I'll just pencil him in for four more trips to the Super Bowl. So there's just not going to be a lot of rings to spread around.
Yeah, because who won Super Bowls during the Brady era? So you have Brady, Roethlisberger, Eli.
Peyton.
Drew Brees.
Yeah. Flacco and Drew Brees.
Flacco. I think that's it, pretty much.
That's
the list.
And what the...
Did I say Roethlisberger?
Yeah, okay. Roethlisberger was two, the Mannings were two each, and then everyone else was one.
Yeah. So there will be other quarterbacks that will win Super Bowls in the Mahomes era.
Probably.
Because I just don't know if they go... They will.
Probably.
There will.
There will be. I mean, there will be a year where they just...
They'll probably...
Look out or get unlucky.
I don't think it's on the board enough, though, as a lock, you know,
but Brady
that somebody else wins. Honestly, right now with Mahomes, I'm like, if he could win with that team, like,
I know.
How many more can he win with?
I mean, Brady went, 10 years without Super Bowl? championship.
He did. He did go
but
a long
he
time.
Went to a couple still.
But what if Mahomes just goes to every single one forever?
I mean, great.
That makes it tough for...
makes it real tough for CJ and the Texans.
That makes it tough for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Makes it tough for all these guys.
Lawrence out.
The year that he gets hurt will be... Oh, wait. We didn't mention Herbert.
Yeah, because he's forgettable.
Gardner Minshew.
Out.
Aiden O'Connell.
In.
Anthony Richardson.
Out.
Speaking of Super Bowls.
Will Levis.
Out.
Sean McDermott said it's kind of narrow-minded to say the Bills haven't succeeded without a Super Bowl. Do you agree to that?
So ignorant. You're ignorant. It sounds like Michael Jackson in South Park, the Jeffersons episode.
You're ignorant. You're saying I can't win a Super Bowl. It's not a success if I don't win a Super Bowl. That's ignorant.
That's just the most whiny-sounding thing I've ever heard. It's like, dude, this is how it's measured. You guys have been Super Bowl favorites twice.
I get why a guy who hasn't won a Super Bowl says that.
I do, too.
Like
I understand.
I'll put it out there like that. I get why he says that.
Yeah, it's ignorant. It's ignorant to say that we haven't succeeded.
Well, I mean, you only succeeded last year because you won the last five games of the regular season when you were 6-6 and exposed as a 9/11 hyper.
No, well, an Al-Qaeda appreciator. He appreciated
He
appreciated the...
He wasn't hyping 9/11. He was grit. Appreciating Al-Qaeda.
Their tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caleb Williams.
Yes.
Out.
What am I supposed to say? Okay, give you... At least, this is my hope window.
J.J. McCarthy.
Michigan man.
He's a winner.
He's a Michigan man.
Let me tell you. The gargling... That Jim Harbaugh did today
that was
of J.J. McCarthy. Best pro day, best combine I've ever seen. Shut up, dude.
I don't know. I can't believe him. He's a Michigan man.
I'd be terrified. If it was that good,
then trade Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert to the Bears. Take J.J. McCarthy,
maybe they're
number
do
five.
That. Maybe they're going to do that.
That'd be awesome.
It would be hilarious if Jim Harbaugh traded Herbert so he could get J.J. McCarthy. You know what? I want that to happen.
That would be
That's not off the board either.
It's not.
That's got to be a 1% possibility. What do the Chargers pick?
Fifth.
Yeah, no, they don't even have to trade anyone. They can just pick them.
They can just take J.J. and then trade Herbert for an army of players and picks.
Oh, I want that to happen so bad. That would be hilarious.
It would be so chaotic, but I would be very here for it.
They trade him to the Cowboys, and the Cowboys trade Dak Prescott to, like, the Raiders.
Gross. All right. 2 hours from now. Is it 2 hours from now? When's 2:45 Pacific time? It's 3 hours from now?
Yes.
3 hours from now, Shohei Ohtani will give a statement. He won't give questions. He won't answer questions, but he will give a statement. That's next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Glenn George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Shohei Ohtani is going to speak with the media today. We got that report yesterday, and then just recently we found out he's not going to answer any questions.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
You know, sometimes, why don't people learn from history?
Well,
I don't know. Maybe putting Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve at a podium, not letting them answer any questions. So that's the one thing that the media is going to pick up on was a bad idea. Because when they went in the clubhouse, everyone gave honest, good answers. But Alex and Jose did not have good written statements. That PR ball drop was huge.
It's so easy to forget things that happened a year ago. So something that happened almost... 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
Probably around 5 years ago?
I guess it was 2020?
Spring training 2020.
Okay, so four years ago or so. So it is easy to forget something like this. But to me, I look at it from this perspective. Like, if you're Shohei Ohtani, do you want people off your case? Because this doesn't help. At least I think. To his credit... the guy is incredibly private.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're talking about the visits he was making during free agency, where it seemed like it was a bad thing that David Roberts said that there had been a meeting between the Dodgers and Shohei Ohtani, and we were laughing for a couple of days, thinking to ourselves, oh, the Dodgers just dodgered themselves again. Another divisional playoff loss, this time during February of free agency. But then ultimately, okay, he signs with the Dodgers. But we did not know that this man was married. And this is also somebody who still speaks through an interpreter. Call me xenophobic. He's been here for 6 years. The fact that he is still speaking behind an interpreter is noteworthy to me, considering all sorts of international stars, specifically in basketball, all seem to have pretty damn good grasp on the English language.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic. You know, four of the best players in the game. They're from other countries. Is English their first language? Doesn't sound like it, but they still speak it. They work hard on it. Hell, Julio Rodriguez in the AL West. That's a person who I think could potentially, if he wanted to, have gone the route of, oh, I'm just never going to actually speak to the media. I'm going to have an interpreter with me at all times.
Mm-hmm.
With Shohei Ohtani, I truly do not understand it. It is a very convenient shield to have.
It is.
Especially for a situation like this, where you just read a statement, and here's the funny thing, the guy who's supposed to be translating for him is a new guy, best case scenario, if the person even exists. So he gives himself a little bit of armor, and let's be honest, nothing ever is really accomplished at a press conference. We're at the point now where you don't find out anything at a press conference that you don't already know. You might get some confirmation on something like that.
Sure.
But to go about it this route, I don't think makes the noise go away for the Dodgers at all.
No, it won't, because there's more and more. Whether you have, you know, this random Twitter account that claims they have documentation that, you know, going to, through random games. Look, it has 9 million impressions. That doesn't mean it's correct, but it's something that 9 million people or 9 million Twitter accounts have seen. Maybe not 9 million exactly. But
no, 9 million. No, someone on Twitter has scrolled past it 9 million times.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
It's still, that means so many people have seen it and read through it, because as you go through the thread, there's all these allegations of games that Shohei Ohtani was betting on and then throwing games. Whether it's true or not, whatever. I'm not going to pretend like I know it's true. But then you have on a radio station in Washington this week, you have a guy who says he knows Shohei Ohtani's bookie in Orange County, and his name is Brad, and it's closer to $25 million in gambling debt and gambling.
Only on
like
soccer,
that.
From what only I understood. Only on soccer,
yeah. So
sure.
It's all over the place, but you're not going to get a firm answer. And even if he's going to deny that he gambled on games today. He's going to, you know, say that Ipe stole the money. Funny enough, then we find out this weekend that Ipe also apparently has been lying on his resume.
He's got a little Jack Easterby in him.
That's what I thought.
His resume, because remember with Jack Easterby, there was a period of time where he was with the Jaguars, and I believe he claimed to have a title that he never actually mm-hmm. had. So with Ohtani's interpreter, I guess he claimed that he was the interpreter for former Red Sox reliever Hideki Okajima.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Sox actually came out with a statement saying, nope, that never happened. And maybe we got to take what the Red Sox say with a grain of salt here, but this is interesting.
And he lied about where he went to college.
You have the most unreliable actor as somebody who has potentially stolen millions of dollars from Shohei Ohtani. It does make it seem a little bit more plausible that this could all have happened to Shohei Ohtani out of just ignorance. But at the same time, I don't really know what part of this story to trust. And now we're just going to get a PR statement with no questions asked in response to it afterwards. And baseball's just going to expect everyone to forget about this. I suppose they will, because everyone wants Ohtani to play baseball. Everyone likes watching him play, no matter what team he plays for. But I don't think this goes away. And I think more people will continue to dig and dig and dig. This just keeps the digging going. If you're actually truthful and honest and take questions, okay, maybe that slows down.
And again, I'm saying maybe. I'm speculating.
I think part of it, too, though, is the fact that he's, like, actually under, like, FBI investigation. And so you want to be very careful with what you say in front of a microphone.
Yeah.
While you're under investigation from the FBI. And, again, this is something that it would be in a second language. So, like, he has to be very careful about what he says and doesn't say. Nothing can get lost in translation. And the bad thing is his interpreter is the guy who's kind of the eye of the storm here.
We're expecting him to read off a piece of paper, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not expecting him to speak from the heart. If he spoke from the heart, maybe a little more believable.
I mean, he's got to put that thing in reverse and bus drive this guy.
Yeah, no, that's
he's got to bury him.
That's the key. Is just to, like you mentioned all the stories that came out this weekend about like him lying on his resume, mm-hmm. not going to the college he said he went to. It's like that's your way out of it is to make this guy to make the interpreter seem like the biggest scumbag on earth. And like, yeah, okay, man, maybe he is. Maybe he is the biggest scumbag on earth. I don't know, but that's the way that that's the easiest way, kind of in the clear. For Otani.
Yeah.
Written statement in Japanese, probably?
That's a good question, because he can speak English.
Yeah, he did speak in English, like, what, was he, like, accepting an award or something?
He did right. After the, he did after the World Baseball Classic on Fox with Ben Verlander.
Yeah, and he did, you know.
So it's just to the extent, and like, I remember I've heard Ben, because he's obsessed with Otani in a really bizarre way, talk about how, like, you can... You know, you can see Otani understanding the questions, so he understands it. It might just be wanting to give the correct answer coming back, but
yeah.
My guess is that the statement will not be in English, and there will be an interpreter there.
If you do it in English, some questions will feel answered, and some people will be put at ease. That doesn't make it actually truthful, but that is a part of this, too. This language barrier is a very interesting element of this, especially considering the interpreter is the guy who stole the money, allegedly. This makes it so fascinating.
Yeah, and yeah, it will be funny. Just like, is he just going to get up there, speak Japanese, and be like, all right, thank you for your time, and then that's it?
That would be funny if he ended it by saying, thank you for your time as well.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that. No, but arigato, and he walks away. I've been watching Shogun.
I've been watching Tokyo Vice and Shogun. And I know a lot about the Japan culture.
Yeah.
But if, like, some other interpreter walks up and then just says what Otani said in English to people, that would also be funny. Or if Shohei's, like, just standing next to a guy who's reading a statement, looking, like, serious, solemn, nodding, like, yep, I mean this. Like, this, the scene is going to be interesting.
And this is just the beginning.
Yeah, and I get why you do it. It's because, like... They're going to have to play on Thursday. Like, opening day is on Thursday. He's going to be available in a clubhouse. So you want a, like, here's, like, our first public, you know, acknowledgement of this, or first public statement on this. Then, you know, after we win 5-3 against the Arizona Diamondbacks and you want to come and talk to me about it, then I'll just say, you know, ongoing investigation. I can't talk about
it. I am curious what his strategy will be, because, like, if you guys obviously remember back, it was weird because the pandemic was going on, so there wasn't as much media access. But once the media access did start to open up, every single city that the Astros would visit, those reporters felt like it was their opportunity to take a crack at Bregman, Correa, and these guys. And I would expect Chandler Rome to, when Otani comes here for the first time, to try to get a crack at Otani and to figure out, you know, what's going on.
Crack at him.
I mean, everyone's going to ask questions. But this is not going to be the end.
Yeah.
If baseball
get a spotlight up in front of them.
Exactly.
What were you gambling on the night of March 22nd? Were you betting on Longwood to cover against the Cougs?
Terrible bet.
No, that's a bad bet. That's
they
a very
by
bad bet.
Twice the
you
spread.
Idiot.
I didn't make it in time to LaBerge on Friday to get that bet in. Instead, I was hanging out, and you know, we had the full experience this weekend at the sportsbook. We were outside on the patio on Saturday. It was awesome. I highly recommend that if you are, you know, leaving Texas to go to Lake Charles, you go to LaBerge in Lake Charles. The sports book was very cool. The casino was a good time. Sean and I played way too much video blackjack. It was a terrible idea, but we had a good time this weekend over at LaBerge. But also, I got to take the whole experience in. I brought my wife with me this weekend. We went to the steakhouse. We went to Emerald. We went to Asia, the Asian restaurant they have there. We went to the seafood restaurant for brunch on the last day before we left. Great food all over the place. Sean had some great pizza. We watched Brian McDonald eat this thing called a death burger, and I thought he was going to die on the air on Saturday, but he made it through, and he'll even be here for the Killer Bees today. But if you have not downloaded the Penn Play app yet, make sure you do so, because when you do, you have the chance to win $2,000 in Penn Play cash. And when you leave Texas and you want to go bet on your Texas teams, make sure you head over to Lake Charles and the LaBerge.